Hi everyone, welcome back to Prevention Nation,
where we believe education and awareness can change the culture of violence. I'm Caitlin Wagenfield.
And I'm Roy Letts. Well, you got me almost emotional, because, like, I mean, right? Like, when I grow up, I want to be you, so, or like you, because, honestly, I mean, that's some of the personal growth that I know I still have to go through, because when you described, you know, what you would do in the setting of an incarcerated community, a community of incarceration, that you're, I guess in my brain, I was thinking you were going in and, I don't even know what was happening. I'm not even making sense here. I guess I don't know what I imagined you doing, but when you said that you're going in and you're teaching them about the choices that they themselves can make about themselves, realizing that there are lots of choices that can happen to them that they are beyond their control.
Yeah.
And I guess I never even imagined it was that simple. I guess I didn't simplify it down to that this person is just, this individual who's there listening to is getting those building blocks of bodily autonomy that they can build on later, but right now it's just with what they have power and control over. And I guess I just didn't bring it down to that kind of a minimalist perspective. I guess I just am still hung up, and pardon me to my listeners and to everybody here in the room, but like, I'm still just so damn mad. I want to go in and just shake the warden and be like, how do you let people experience and have to go through this? This is insane, because all these people are going to be released. They're going to come back into the community. And with, you know, with what we know as an agency in response to, you know, sexual assault, hospital response, sexual assault, and people coming to the domestic violence shelter with all this, you know, history of rape and sexual assault in their home, and the impairment and you know, all the things that causes for these people to have to overcome now and heal through. It just angers me that we have a system right here in this county that's allowing this. So I guess I still get so hung up on the anger and the frustration that's allowed within a community that it's allowed. But you just taught me that I need to settle down for a minute and realize that it's about the human and the individual that's receiving that education and that learning. And that's where I think that's where the value and the importance of what you're doing comes out. So I have to learn to settle down a little bit. I don't know about you, Abby. I'm all fired up over here. Where are you at right now?
I mean, these are fire-upable topics.
Yeah.
Working on some tough stuff and some things that affect a lot more people than you think. And we're talking about specific populations today, but it affects more people than you think, and it affects those people more so. So it's definitely fire upable. I don't think that's correct verbiage,
but I love it. Fire upable.
It works for me.
And it is. I mean, we're all feeling that way.
Yeah, and when Rochelle mentioned, you know, using the word marginalized a few times that we haven't through this conversation, I mean, and then we think about access. I mean, yeah, I think a lot of people struggle to think when we say marginalized populations. A lot of people typically think of very specific populations, some of which we've addressed here. But how is an incarcerated individual not a marginalized, also a marginalized population?
Yeah, sure.
These are people who don't have access to anywhere near the level of healthcare, dental care. I mean, some of those physical health cares, but mental health care, all the way down to sexual education. I know as a former law enforcement officer and corrections officer, we used to talk about, you know, rehabilitation, but I used to get fired up back then that for a lot of these individuals, it's habilitation. It's just some of the primary education that they don't have access to, that they probably oftentimes didn't even come into prison or incarceration with having had access previous to the incarceration. But now once they're incarcerated, they have much less access. So I don't know. It's just like, I'm definitely all fired upable.
It makes me think, we were at a committee meeting, it was about a year ago now, with SAPSE, when we were talking to there was an opportunity we were videoing with six about people who, I forget which jail they were at, but we were having a really candid, open, honest conversation with them covering all different types of topics. And
perfect.
A lot of them were repeat offenders, but a lot of them were also saying the first time they were in those systems was when they were 16, 17,
exactly.
18. And so you're talking about things they don't have access to. Yes, these adults don't have access to these things, but a lot of them have started at these younger ages. They definitely didn't have access to these things. And
yeah, it's been a career of incarceration for them.
So how can they ever, you know, get that autonomy, get that education, get that access if they're You know what I mean?
And then they're coming in with how many aces? I mean, who knows what their historical trauma is?
A lot of them are saying that's one of the reasons why they ended up there is, I don't have money. How am I going to get money? I don't. And you're talking about choices and things like that.
Sure.
It's not always black and white. And so maybe they made a bad choice, but why did they make that bad choice?
Yeah, so natural consequences, but all sorts of precursors and risk factors and risk contributors that really put them in a space where you had a system that didn't care about them, a system that was seeking to incarcerate them anyways, you know, because we have all sorts of, I mean, you can use any synonyms you want, or, you know, for indentured servitude, or, you know, I mean, there's a whole bunch of things we could talk about and get crazy about
that pipeline.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. So,
well, here's some good news, right? So the good news is you struck a chord with me, Roy, when you said, okay, so now I'm released. What happens, right? So I have experience as a sexuality educator invited to do different courts. One's in Montgomery County called Kushinda Court. Beautiful idea. I get to talk with roughly 30-something, and it's African-American male-focused, men who have been released or has spent some time in that justice system.
Mm-hmm.
And let me tell you that and the second experience is in Hamilton County, where women have been sex trafficked. And there's a program, I think it's a brilliant program. And this judge has allowed me to come in, both asked me to talk about healthy relationships, right? And look how we just talked about folks who've never really had an ability, and I'm generalizing, of course, but to learn what, at least in school, what healthy relationships are like, because we know sex ed doesn't exist.
Yeah.
And secondarily, if we talk about a generational concern here with ending up in the justice system, perhaps adults in the life aren't teaching great messages around, right? So it is huge, right? But there's these two courts with these two amazing judges. I am so proud to work with them. I'm so flattered that they asked me, because it does say we care. Mm-hmm. Okay, so now that you're less confined,
right,
and essentially you have, you know, more freedoms, but not as much, right? Because especially a probation, I think, in parole. I don't know their words.
Probation, parole if they're coming out of prison, or probation from jails.
And there was a third judge, and the magistrate wanted to create a DEI day and focus specifically on LGBTQ+. And that's Montgomery County as well.
Mm-hmm.
So in the population that we were creating this day for were attorneys. So I want you to hear good things, right?
And you're giving me hope. I mean,
Roy, there's more of us out there in different jobs. And clearly, I think we would all agree the benefit of our work is in who we can connect with, right? Who, I know sometimes it's a fight. Like, somebody asks for services and they tell you what you can't say and then you have to make a decision, right?
Mm-hmm.
But these are folks who are asking for services, and when you have a dialogue such as ours, they understand where you're coming from, why you're coming from it. I can support my work with research, with scientific. My stuff is medically accurate, scientifically supported. I used lived voice experience in my work without talking about my lived experience, because I don't prefer to do that. I want to be the teacher.
Mm-hmm.
I want people to look at me and think about me in whatever way works for them. I don't necessarily divulge all my identities that aren't visible, because why?
Yeah.
I'm not your mom.
Yep.
I'm not your girlfriend. I'm here. I got this. You think I'm worthy to listen to? Then take what you want, right?
Right.
And I really appreciate, I'm getting more and more into the justice system. So these are three things I've talked about historically, but they're kind of a one-off. I would love to do more, especially in juvenile justice, because there's a disproportionately high rate of LGBTQ+ in juvenile justice, in our children's services. And that's a whole different conversation. Sorry.
But I mean, you know, and before I get to the third question, you know, that we had for you, I just think, again, the areas where we can, you know, where I think you could help inform, or you could help just guide us in small ways, just in conversations, and in really honestly, in just knowing you and hearing you speak, are areas of real strong interest for us, and areas that I want to move this agency. So one of my real strong goals is to eventually work in, because we're, you know, our agency mission is to create violence-free communities.
Yeah.
That's the primary, you know, crux of what our agency mission is. And yet we have a community within our communities where rape and sexual assault are occurring with some regularity.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think there is a whole wonderful opportunity for us to grow not next week, not next month, not this year even, but in time to develop that that line of work and that body of work with our criminal justice system here in Warren County. So I want to go there eventually, but then also you mentioned trafficking victims. Right now, Geraldine, Maddie, and myself are actually leading this agency in our work around human trafficking.
Fantastic.
And some of the challenges, and I'll tell you, boy, there are some barriers and some walls I've hit. We won't even go into that here that we can talk about on these microphones.
One conversation that would create controversy.
Yeah, I'm
so,
pretty
yeah.
sure. So we'll definitely have some things to talk about post-recording, but I'll tell you, I'm excited that you've, you know, have a lot of knowledge in that area as well, because I would love to, you know, pick your brain with some of those concepts and some of the ways that we're going. But to our third question, and we've talked a little bit around it, right now, Maddie and I are really trying to do a lot of work around with our population with developmental intellectual disabilities. Specifically, we've met with a young person here in Warren County who faced some pretty significant charges, and based on you know, sexual relationships involving alcohol and all these things. And and then when we're talking about, you know, access to education, well, a lot of the people that we've learned so far through our conversations and collaborations have not had this education.
No.
We go in and teach kids in our junior high and high school that once you introduce alcohol or drugs, consent, you know, based on, you know, Ohio rule, is that you can't consent once you consume alcohol. You can't consent. So our the kids in our typical or traditional classrooms are getting this knowledge and education, but we have a whole population of people that aren't. So I guess my question to you is, what advice do you give us, or could you give us, on teaching bodily autonomy, consent, in this population where, A, there's not a lot of social acceptance being seen, them being seen as sexual beings, and two, just the diversity in functioning, and there's no clear law on consent for population with DD and ID. So, I don't know, what advice do you have for us as we move forward and into this field and into this arena?
So, let me just acknowledge, Roy, Abby, your questions are not easy.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
They are dissertation based. I don't know how long this podcast is supposed to be, but I will try to be succinct. I think there's basically three responses. One is, as a professional sexuality educator, and I've already said how I do my work, I can't take gigs where my ethics aren't honored. And so if somebody wants me to say private parts instead of penis or vulva or genitals, I can't work there. So sometimes I have to say no, even though I'm personally upset because I think the work would be good. But I'm not going to compromise what our best practices.
Well, we already found my first barrier. That's right. I mean, that's...
I'm not. Oh, I'm just not. Yeah. I'm not going to compromise. And I hear you, and it's so frustrating. I feel you. I get it. And I also, I rarely say no, because typically I have a conversation with whomever has invited me, or the leadership, if it's not the leadership that's invited me, and we talk it through. I once did sex ed with 7th and 8th grader, no, I'm sorry, they were 9th and 10th graders at a Nazarene high school, a private Nazarene high school. And we worked it out because they knew what my lesson plan was about, and I co-taught with a science teacher who then informed the students what that culture's expectations were. I could do neither. I'm not Nazarene, I'm not an expert in the culture, I don't know what the rules are, right?
Yeah.
So I couldn't have tried to teach that if I wanted to.
Right.
Just like I appreciated that the science teacher had no clue about the endocrine system and other things that I was asked to teach. We created a partnership that worked for us. I was able to maintain my ethics, and they were maintaining their cultural competency. We'll just put it that way.
Yeah.
Right? No harm, no foul. We did our jobs. So partnering is really important. And I will say, what hurts my feelings is that no one's ever called a math teacher and said, you can't teach the Pythagorean theorem to my kid, but that I hear parents call schools all the time and you can't teach sex ed, quote unquote, sex ed to my kid. First of all, nobody okay, a couple colleges, especially back in the 90s, asked me to teach about sex.
Yeah.
Can I be candid? I would love to teach about sex because y'all are having some problems. I don't know if you've seen the national data.
Oh, yeah.
But y'all are having some problems in your sex stuff. And that makes me sad because I don't think sex is supposed to be personally problematic. I'm not talking about violence.
Yeah.
Right. I'm talking about sex, right? Mm-hmm. I never get to teach that. I would like to. I think I would have a brilliant PowerPoint if I was allowed to teach this.
I've seen some of your PowerPoints. I can confirm. I think it would be brilliant. And at the bare minimum, entertaining and enlightening.
Right?
So, yeah.
Right. There's lots of ways to teach. And here's my second point. There's lots of ways to teach. So, first of all, I can't compromise my professional ethics, but I can partner, and we can be creative with that partnership, right?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Number two, I don't expect words to make an impact. And that did not saying that they can't, but if we look at, you know, communication theory and you think of a circle, words are 7% of the impact. Most of the impact comes from proximity, so where I stand to you, and I'm not a podium person, I'm a shoes off walk person.
Oh, yeah. Me too. Yeah.
But I don't stand close to people because, hello, I just don't. But for lots of reasons. But also facial expressions, which I know listeners can't see, but we're having amazing eye contact.
Yeah.
I'm working from what you're giving me with your face. You're working with me. So part of learning is extremely visual, hence also the PowerPoints. People make fun of me all the time, and that's, I don't mind at all.
Yeah.
PowerPoints are a way to relieve anger, right?
Oh,
get creative, right? You need to express yourself in the PowerPoints in an academically sincere way. And, you know, you can make fun of me, but I'm going to be like, I'm going to need a projector if you want me to come. So having said that, no teaching methods. Understand that language is powerful. I'm not backing off of that. But just because I'm using language in that space does not make it powerful. I think the learner determines what is appropriate for them and what is powerful for them. I do say, and I think this will be the fourth time I've said it or the third, I'm not your mom. I'm not your, I say that everywhere I go, even with executive boards in hospitals or in government agencies. There's such a misnomer that what I do is so heinous because I'm corrupting, or I don't even want to use the rhetoric because we all know the rhetoric, right?
Oh, sure do.
Yeah. I know it for 33 years. Mm-hmm. I know it in front of school boards when I am asked to quote unquote testify.
Mm-hmm.
I know it in front of library boards when I'm asked to testify. The bottom line is what I do is so potentially powerful for individuals that people want to censor it. And so I'm not going to go there. I'm going to use techniques that folks, learners, can grasp onto that aren't as intimidating as what I think those people who are spouting rhetoric assume that I can use. That wasn't a sentence. Did that come out right?
That made perfect sense to me.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll have to listen back.
Yeah. So. Right. Fix that up.
Wait. No, I don't think I need to, but
It teaching methods, how you present, not just what you present, and you know, I think the third thing is just we need to really affirm learners for being learners. It's, again, in any given classroom, and Roy, you brought this up before, I can have a person with a 67 IQ sitting next to a person with 135 IQ. What does that matter? Well, it might matter in language that's presented on a screen or reading or writing. It might matter there. It doesn't have to, but it might. It might matter about speed of comprehension. It might matter if I'm talking concretely or abstractly. And there ain't nothing more abstract than the endocrine system. I mean, we've hardly ever seen one, right?
Right.
Because they don't hang up in classrooms like the digestive system does.
No, yeah, that's...
So again, sorry, that was number two with visual learning. But number three is, you know, work with the group that we're working with to make the education palatable, usable for them. I don't want to be where I'm not wanted, but I already assume, again, based on, and it's a vocal minority. Let me point that out.
Yeah.
When you do any polling from credible polling sources, most parents want their young people to have this information.
I agree.
Period. How we get through the rhetoric, you know, that's my personal power right there. I use how I get through the rhetoric. We can partner in ways that my ethics allow me to partner, and that you'll allow me to partner. Or we just won't, and your kids will remain, or the adults. I work now, mostly I work with adults, will remain, and I'm going to say this word, ignorant.
Yep.
And if that's the kind of society you want, first of all, we probably shouldn't be talking anyway, because that's not the society I live in. I want our polis to be informed. I want our polis to have so much knowledge, whether it's BS knowledge or scientific knowledge or the space in between, that they can discern what is working for them. I don't care how people vote. I really don't. I just care that they vote. And that, so it seems like I got away from sexuality education, but because sexuality is so politicized, I'm not away from the topic.
Yeah.
So
you're surely not.
Holler if you want me. I'll partner with just about anybody. And if I don't have the skills or the expertise or the knowledge, I would love to learn it, but we may not be partnering at that time until I fix my learning curve, right? There are people, I am seeking, one of my coworkers who is has been embedded in the justice system for her entire career. I asked her to be on a call with a magistrate to me so I could understand, what is probate court? I had to look it up. I'm not sure, right?
Yeah.
And even though I read it, I still didn't understand it, and I needed...
How does it apply to people's lives? And
right, and oh wait, name change court? Oh, I got it.
Yeah.
Okay, we can talk about trans folks right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, so sometimes I don't get all the moving pictures, but I rely on my partners and my colleagues, my coworkers. I rely on people who care about having an informed... I love the word polis, because that's a big word, but I want my neighbors to know as much as I do, even if they don't have the same values.
There, Rochelle, there's so much that I can't even... I'm not sure there's ever been a podcast that we've had where I'm going to go back with such intention and listen to word for word. Because there's already so many things that you just said around that to answer my question around this population and our work that I'm going to take away as personal skill building for myself. Because I struggle with saying no, because I'm preaching to the choir here. I'm sure you know why I struggle to say no, because I want people to be informed. I don't want people to be uninformed. I want people to be safe and healthy and kind to each other. And I want that so bad that sometimes I want to force, what do they call it? A square peg into a round hole or whatever.
Right.
I just want to make it happen. But you're very right. I have to, what I'm getting from this is that I have to learn to say, if it doesn't coincide, or if it doesn't, if it's doesn't meet my ethical standards, then maybe I just can't collaborate right now. Maybe we can't do this bit of work right now, and your population will have to just continue to be uninformed until which time you're ready to collaborate and cooperate.
You build
with
up
this.
That money for the health disparities that you're co-creating with the individual.
Yep.
Let me tell you a quick story. So one of the most worstest things I have ever done, see, I can make up words too.
Yeah, let's do it.
In my career, and I have great regret about this, I do have identities that I don't realize I work from. Even as a trained educator, I still am a middle-class white woman, and I forget. And so two things I've done in my career. One is in the 90s, I told every gay kid to come out. I told him, come out. It's going to be great if you're visible. We need people to be visible. You feel this way. What a stupid thing to say.
Mm-hmm.
Because what I should have been saying, what I know now, is only if it's safe for you.
Right.
And there's good intention, but...
Right. Yep. I had good intention, Roy. I was supporting somebody where they were, but I was supporting them from my sense of personal power, from my sense of whatever, integrity, from my privilege.
Mm-hmm.
Because I have more privilege than this under 18-year-old queer kid who is getting beat in their family, and I'm the one saying, no, tell them, right? So regret, Roy, let's learn from my regret. Oh my gosh, that's an awful story. And you know, I own it, and I try to do better now, but I can't. I worked for a nonprofit company in Cincinnati that worked with dual diagnosed youth in their own living situation, which was mostly in apartments.
Mm-hmm.
Dual diagnosed was MH and DD, so not drug and alcohol.
Yeah.
And although, sure.
Could have that to you.
Yeah.
I made sure every kid had a bank account when they were quote unquote released or able to be their own autonomous citizen person. And so I'd get those bank accounts up for them to like $1,500, $1,800. I made sure they left with all their furniture, and I made sure they had furniture. Couches, chairs, a bed, right? Pillows, sheets. And I didn't realize that that could be a weapon. I didn't realize then that people could prey on them to take that stuff away. Or that stuff could be bargained to add to their own challenges with addiction, perhaps, or set them up for violence because they would just get beat up and then their couch would disappear. I was thinking I was doing a really good thing because I only used my frame of reference for it. Because I wish in my world that that could have happened for me. So look, I'm tearing up. I have such regret about my mistakes. And again, owning them publicly, I think there's something to learn here. It's okay to slow your roll.
Yeah.
It's okay to check in with our privilege
mm-hmm.
and to remember that the world isn't working from my lens, even though I have, Roy, you're a man with amazing intentions. You know, the passion, Abby, I hear from you, and you're sitting up and back in your seat as we're talking too, right? I mean, I get it. I get this vibe, and check it.
Yeah. No, you're right. I mean, I took, I was in a training one time with some community partners, and we were looking at the social identity wheel and recognizing what identities I walk into a room with.
Right.
And I remember sitting there and some of the discussions, and I'm staring at my wheel and the social identity boxes that I checked. And I was glancing at some of the social identities that my neighbors sitting next to me were checking. And as I'm staring at these and as the discussion is happening in the room, I just thought to myself, I was overwhelmed with the idea and concept especially considering the person whom I'm fortunate enough to be married with, the two young women that I've been fortunate enough to be a father to, and then the community partners and the people I work with and stuff like that, I came to like this epiphany, this realization for myself that was meaningful for myself, was that the advances and the things that we're making, the progress we're making in the world today, is not the progress of pick an identity, LGBTQIA+. It's not their progress. It's not the progress of black and brown people. It's not their progress. The progress, the real progress, from my lens and my perspective, is what growth and willingness I am allowing to happen to me, to let people who are already doing the amazing things into the spaces where they get to be seen doing those things that they're doing amazingly. My privilege has blinded me through my whole life from ability to see what is not. I mean, even to your point when you said around coming out, you know, your story about, you know, just come on out. We think about so much of our work in response to domestic violence, sexual assault, call the police. That is not a safe answer for everybody in our community. It is not a safe answer. So yeah, we do have to check these biases and that we have and the experiences we have, our personal lived experience. It's not everybody else's lived experience. And
That's one of the most honest moments I've recorded in a long time. And again, I don't say this stuff to shame us about our privilege. It's not a weapon. Privilege is not, in this conversation, it's we use it for good. But the good that we do is self-reflection and just remembering not everybody is middle class or wants to be.
Yeah.
Why would I set up your life that way when I have the power to set it up the way you want it? So,
Rochelle, you are amazing.
Stop.
Is there, you know, before we wrap this up, and this is going to be for our listeners, this is going to be a two-parter. So, and we love these, and these have been some of our favorites with our guests to have the two-parters. Is there anything, Rochelle, in closing that you would like to add, or you think that would be important for our listeners to know? If not, we can close it out. We can just say our, you know, goodbyes to our listeners for now.
I think I want to add that I hope that in the position that you have here with this podcast, you continue the conversations. I think it's lovely, wonderful. I think the opportunity for people to listen and do their own check-in or growth is amazing. Resources. I didn't cite the people that were going through my head as I was talking about these
mm-hmm.
things, but I think resources and citing folks are really important. And I love my experience here, so thanks so much for having me. This is my thank you.
Oh, Rochelle,
what a platform.
Well, it has been I really think it's been our pleasure, but if you want to say it's been yours as well.
It's
and before we post this, anything that you want us to cite or put in the show notes, please let me know, any resource or anything, and we'll put that in the show notes. So Abby, do you have anything to close?
Awesome. Happy I got to sub in for Caitlin.
Yeah.
It was a really cool experience.
Oh, Caitlin's going to regret this so much having missed
Caitlin.
This. So, yeah, sorry, Caitlin. So, for all of our listeners out there, please take care of yourselves and take care of each other.
Bye.